Hello, everybody. Welcome to Wholehearted Loving. I'm Stephanie.
Hi, I'm Georgiana.
Today's episode, I will be titling, Not a Damn Thing I Can Do About It. But before we get into that, we'll start with a self-connection practice so that we can connect with ourselves before we connect with each other and this podcast.
Which is something we can do something about. I'm going to use this one since I'm already doing it. So first, let's just feel where your body is touching the surface you're sitting on, standing on, laying on. I'm actually like intentionally sort of digging in the top of my foot into the ottoman. I'm really feeling that pressure right now. So that's helping me feel aware of my body. And let's pick up something so that your hands get to hold something. It can be anything. It doesn't really matter what it is.
I'm holding my own thumb.
Perfect. Hold your own thumb. And we're just going to take some time to like feel the thing you're holding. And just notice how it feels in your hand. Is it hard? Is it soft? Smooth? Rough? Temperature? Hot, cold, warm? What do you notice about it? And like the noticing part is a great bonus, but really what we're practicing is just feeling sensation, like feeling our hand touching something, becoming aware that our hand is touching something. And the reason why I want us to practice that is that if you can wire up two points of contact that your body can feel, you're really helping yourself bring some grounding and some sturdiness in moments that are tough. Right? So for me, I started with my feet. Like when I first was doing this practice, I just wanted to feel my feet on the ground. And then I noticed often I was sitting, so then I practiced my butt too. But it was when I added feet or butt with hand. What is my hand touching? Or what is my arm leaning against? But I used hand first as a way to sort of prime up awareness outside of my feet and my butt. And it really made a difference in moments where I was feeling nervous or like, you know, uncomfortable, anxious, scared, overwhelmed, restless, furious. It never made me feel worse. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It never made the uncomfortable feeling bigger.
Right.
By noticing two points of contact that actually always helped me feel like, okay, I can be with this thing.
It took me a long time for the being with to be true, you know, for that to be an empowered sense of presence instead of like a vague irritation and confusion. Like I'm definitely a person who would have been like, yeah, my hand is touching the thing. Like I get it. Now what? Mm-hmm. And it took a lot of rewiring for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for me too. I mean, I think I was maybe a little less hostile towards my hand just feeling something, which is totally okay. But like, I knew it was the pathway. It was like in service of the next thing. It was in service of being able to be with, like the concept of being with discomfort and being with an uncomfortable sensation was too vague for me and abstract. Like, what the hell does that mean? Right. But I knew that's what people are talking about. Like, can you just let yourself feel the thing and let it pass? Well, what the hell does that mean? I don't understand what that means. But I'm like, well, if I don't even notice what my body is touching, like on an external experience, the internal experiences are often the ones that feel even harder. And we're more, even more disconnected from because we put in years of protection against them. Either we like try to distance from them or we're consumed by them, but neither are it's my ability to be with them. We had no ability to be with it, right? So I knew that like feeling extremities of the body, hands and feet touching something was sort of the gateway to be able to be more skilled at feeling some of the internal yucky stuff. So I was like, okay. It's not that hard. Just feel what's in my hand. Sure, I'll do it. And then over time, it like one day I was like, oh, it's like I just started doing it automatically and it made life feel easier, better. I was like, okay, I'll do more of this. I don't mind better.
Better's pretty good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Nice. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So I said something this morning, I guess, when we first got on here about I have a bunch of contractual deadlines happening right now and I'm waiting for something and I've done all of the things that I can do. And now all that is left is to wait. And I just said, there's not a damn thing I can do about it. And you found that very amusing.
I found that very amusing because it fit very well. I mean, I think it's just, there's a lot of wisdom in accepting that. It took me many, many years, decades to be able to discern what is something I can do something about. What is something that I can't do something about? And can I accept that I can't do something about that and learn to be with the discomfort that comes with that? And eventually actually grow my capacity to be with the things I can't do anything about, the things I can't change, to the point where they don't actually bother me that much. They're just like, that's just a factual thing. I can't do anything about that right now. And then turn towards, well, what can I do something about if I really want to be doing something? And it made me think of this funny story and actually happened yesterday. And it was horrible and funny and like heartwarming all at the same time. So I'm with my kid and we are going to his lacrosse tryouts. And he had realized that he forgot his jock. So they're basically like shorts with like a jock, like a cup in like stuffed in. There's a little pocket for it. He forgot. He's got two, one for hockey, one for lacrosse. And he forgot to pack his jock. He's like, Mom, I think it's in my hockey bag, or it's either in my hockey bag or I'll have to take the one for hockey because I don't know where my lacrosse one is. So sure, we go home and he digs something out of his hockey bag. And he's carrying this thing and we're walking out of the house. And I said, Bud, that is nasty, like horrid, putrid, like it reeks so bad. And I was like, you know, like I'm sensitive to smell. So is he. But like, I think even if you weren't sensitive to smell, like you would have been like, that's awful. And I said, smell it, dude. Like, what do you think? And in the past, when he was younger, he'd be like, no, I'm not smelling it. Or he'd like smell it and like pretend like it's fine. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. But this time he's like, yeah, it's nasty. It's bad. And then we get in the elevator and a few floors down, this woman comes in and I was like looking at him. And I'm feeling so sorry for this lady. And we're looking at each other. And I think like he's at the point where he's like, he gets that things that he's doing or have done are impacting other people. Like when he was younger, just didn't care, didn't notice, whatever. But I think this time he was looking at me like, Mom, I get it. I feel bad for the lady, right? So anyways, we sort of have a laugh about it, get into the car, and just another whiff of it. And I'm like, I just can't. Like, I feel like I'm going to like vomit or something. It's so bad. It's like the smell of, it's like the smell of like, it's just like something that was wet and sweaty stuffed in a bag and got forgotten in the bag. And now like 2 days later, it's getting pulled out. And like this kid thinks it's fine to just whip it on and wear it. Right. Yeah. And so anyways, we're in the car and I roll down every window. It's like 4 degrees outside. So it's cold and sunroof's open. And like the smell is just wafting in the car. And then I try, I'm like, well, maybe turning on the heat would be good because it's cold, but the heat just makes stink even worse, right? And I could tell, like, I was just making these comments. They were like half laughing, half like, oh my God, you know? And he's in the car and he just looked at me, Mom, and he's like, Mom, my bad. It's me. Like, I left it in the bag. Like, I'm sorry. Right. And he was like totally taking ownership for it, like in a very matter of fact way. But then he also said, nothing we can do about it now. In like the most casual, also matter of fact way. And I was like, you're right.
I mean, you could put it in the trunk.
We can do about that right now. Right. So I said to him as we were walking to the car, I'm like, put that thing in the trunk. I do not want to smell in the car. He's like, no, I need to change while we're driving because we're like late. So it was in the car. And but just his way, like I was just really impressed with him being like, yep, this is my bad. You know, I didn't take it out to air it out. I know what I need to do next time. Yes, it's nasty. And also, there's nothing I can do about it right now. Yeah. And it sort of just paused me. And I was like, yeah, like there's no, I don't need to keep adding commentary to this situation because it doesn't help us feel any better about the situation. And it doesn't change anything. It doesn't change anything for the better. Right. And I think old me, and like whether it's with maybe not my kids, but with partners or whatever, like I just feel like, you just have to keep digging at it. You have to keep pointing it out of like how awful it is, how terrible it is. I don't know, right?
Yeah.
Pointing out the obvious, but like just
anxiety in his, relief,
right? And yeah. To hear him just be like, "Yep, it's me, my bad, and nothing I can do about it right now."
Mm.
And he was right, and so we just rolled up the windows halfway. And just drove. And then when we got there, I was like, you need to get out of the car. And I was like, I feel bad for your teammates. And he's like, oh, is it better? You think it's a little bit better now? I'm like, well, maybe, but.
Yeah. I'll give you a wide berth on the field. You can score plenty of goals because no one will be checking you.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's what happened. He said trial went well. And we were laughing. We had laughed at some point. And that was also fun to like laugh a little bit. I'm like, you know, imagine you don't make this team because you stink. Not because you suck and aren't skilled. Like they're going to be like, that kid, like, how come he didn't make that team? He's like so skilled. It's like, well, he just stunk too bad, you know? And we had a good laugh about it. But I could also tell, and this is, I think, something important. I could tell when there was openness for that and receptivity for that humor. And I could tell that if I would have said any more, it would have pushed things over the edge to the point where someone's like, okay, like I got it already. You know, like I messed up. This is the situation. Let's not harp on it and make it worse. And I think many of us have been in that situation where we've either made someone feel even worse than they already feel, or we've made ourselves feel worse than we already feel when there's nothing you can do about that situation anymore. Right. So this was just a neat to see how it all plays out in slow motion. And, you know, really exciting for me as a mom to see that my kid is like, can differentiate between what he can do something about and what he can't, and like when it's time to just let it rest.
Yeah, there's a lot of relief and acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so
it's interesting that I was thinking yesterday about the jokes we make, the laughter we infuse, and the anxiety that can be hidden in there. I want us to do an episode about that at some point. That's a great example you gave.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So with all the stuff I've got going on, I got the relief that you're describing from my mom, actually. And I think I've often said that my mom's approval just feels so good to me, like to a dangerous degree, where if it was some illegal thing, but mother approved, I'd be like, I feel good about this, you know, like I might have to go to prison for life, but mom says I'm okay. So cool. So I phoned my mom and described all of the things that were happening. And it's all very adulty stuff with deadlines and contracts and lawyers and accountants and the government and like a lot of things lining up. And I think what I unconsciously expected from my mom was a bunch of suggestions of things I should try to do to mitigate the situation, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I was unconsciously like prepared to be faced with that. And so I told her all the steps I'd taken. I told her all the things that I had done. And she just said, well, you've done everything you can do. And it was such a crazy relief. It's like, I have. And then so all of the things that I could do, but there's still this 1 or 2 week waiting period where I don't get to know anything new and I just have to wait and hope, you know? Mm-hmm. And for the first few days, that was kind of nerve-wracking, but it's like it diffuses over a few days. And now I really feel in this acceptance space of there is nothing I can do. All I can do is wait. And if hurdles arise, we will deal with them, but they're not here right now.
Mm-hmm. I want to speak to that part because I actually wrote down what you said because I feel like it's so worth remembering what you said. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. So you're talking about how some unknowns, right? You've done all you can do and you've got some relief from pausing with that, knowing that. And then there's all these unknowns that are still possible, right? And some of the possible things that could happen, like, aren't super great. And then we finish that sentence, or you finish that sentence with, and we're not there yet. Mm. Right? We're not at that point yet where those things are happening. We're just right here. And right here is about waiting.
Yeah. And that's so much more comfortable. The intense framework that old Steph would have created around this circumstance, I would have been like deploying people to handle all the what ifs, you know, if something or other hasn't happened by this date, we might possibly need to do this. And like, it's a tremendous squandering of energy and people's time that I used to engage in to help me manage the anxiety of the moment. We're mm-hmm. not there yet. I might need to do those things if X, Y, or Z arises. And we're not there yet. So what is the sense? We talked in the last episode of adding logs to the fires of sadness or worry. Like that was just a bonfire of potentials.
What ifs,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We might never get there.
Mm-hmm. And there's something like right now you said, like all there is to do is wait. And you paired that with, and what a relief. And I know that myself included, I think you in the past, many people probably who are listening, many people who we've worked with would have said, waiting is not a relief. What the heck are you talking about? And I had to learn how to be with the discomfort of the unknown and grow that capacity so that waiting now feels okay. Mm. Right? I feel like no matter what happens, I've got my back. I know I can count on myself. I know the people I can count on. And that helps me feel okay. When I didn't have my back in life and I push past my boundaries all the time and I wouldn't say things were okay or not okay, I couldn't trust myself. So when we can't trust ourselves, we certainly are very afraid of the unknown. Because we don't know how we're going to survive it, right? Yeah. And this reminds me of walking through the parking lot with a good friend of mine. We were finishing a hike, and it was at a time in my life also where the next season was very unknown, like how things would unfold. Well, obviously, how things would unfold was unknown. Like we never know how things are going to unfold, but it was a particular area of my life, maybe relationship realm or something, where like I hadn't even dipped a toe in for like 3.5 years because I wasn't ready for that yet. And I think it was that realm and then career realm in like the what's next. And for each of those things, I could say, I don't know, we'll see. And the I don't know, we'll see came from this, I'm okay with whatever happens. I'll be okay no matter what happens. And I'm curious. I'm excited. I'm in a state of wonder about what's going to happen. And that phrase, I don't know, we'll see, really struck me because in the past, I don't know, we'll see had a very different feel. It was more like, I don't know, we'll see. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Like, oh my gosh, what terrible thing could happen? And what am I going to do if it does? It was a very different state than a state of wonder and a state of trust.
Yeah.
And a state of like, no matter what happens, I know all will be okay. And it's really these tiny tools repeated, practiced over and over, that have given me the confidence to be able to be in that state of, I don't know, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find myself often in a position of reminding people that they actually have really great problem-solving techniques, and they can trust those in the moment, and they don't need to set up this long plan for all of the things that might go wrong and how they will handle it. That's actually really overwhelming for our systems and can cause a lot of shutdown. But when we can trust the moment, and when we know we've got mm-hmm. tools to support mm-hmm. us in those moments, mm-hmm. to me, that feels like the healthiest and most open way of moving forward with curiosity, as mm-hmm. as you've described.
Yeah.
One of the things I learned at the beginning of my real estate career, which was now like 10 years ago, setting up this framework for people is not helpful. So I noticed that seasoned realtors around me would just speak to clients like, here's the next step. Whereas my inclination was to be like, here are the next 15 steps. And if anything goes wrong at any of these steps, here are the paths that you might take. Not helpful, you know? I was listening to a comedian talking the other day about how if he knew 10 years ago, all of the things he would have had to do to become successful, he never would have started because it was mm-hmm. so overwhelming. But just taking one step at a time made it possible, you know,
yeah,
and I think that's true
step?
For all of us. Yeah.
What's the next step? And that's what I was going to say is like the going down the rabbit hole, ruminating about, well, what if this, then what? And what if that, then what? And what if, you know, and you just go and like, it just goes in this continuous loop. That's not helpful. But if yeah. you really want to put some energy into the what if equation, then I like the, well, if that, then this, right? If that were to happen, I would do this. And it sort of pulls on, we have great problem solving skills. You wouldn't be here today. You wouldn't mm-hmm. be alive today. You wouldn't be functioning if you didn't have problem solving skills.
Yeah.
And knowing that like I remember when I was considering whether I should quit my job and just go full into private practice, and part of it felt exciting and part of it felt very scary. And I had a lot of cries about it and had a lot of going back and forth. And I remember one day I was like, well, if all goes to crap and I have no money, I'm going to sleep on Helen's couch. I think she said to me, like, none of your friends are going to let you sleep on the street. I'm like, oh. Okay, then let's carry on. Right? All of a sudden, there's a solution. I'm like, yeah. Okay, we'll figure it out.
Yeah. I remember that in women's group years ago. Women would come with what I can now identify as a very revved up problem. And Shalina would be like, well, none of us are going to let you starve or be on the street. So there's that. And my first thought always was like, well, that's nice, but I don't know if I can trust that. And like, how many of you, okay, there's like 17 of you. I'm like, okay, so can I spend like a few nights on each of your couches and then what? And, you know, not helpful. I revved myself up a lot in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not helpful because the reality is like 17 people in that room, like nobody would be a stand for you, like even one night out on the street. Like it just wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Right. And for me, that was a really reassuring thing. I'm like, okay, then. Right. And then like people, you know, like have talked to me about similar things. They're like, well, what happens if I lose my job? I'm like, okay, well, what would happen? What would you do? They're like, well, I would get another job. Well, then there.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, do you envision yourself going like forever and ever without a job? No, I just keep trying until I got a job. Well, then there. Would anyone in your life let you sleep on the street? No. Okay, perfect. We're good for the day. Everything
so
that needs
simple.
To be figured out right now is figured out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that just does not jibe with the internal revving up and the wanting to worry. It's just such mm-hmm. an abrupt end. It's like, wait a minute. You mean I can't just talk about this and ruminate about this and worry about this increasingly forever?
I mean, you could, but does it make you feel good? And does it actually better your life? Those are good questions to ask.
They are. Yeah. And how much time do you spend imagining what if everything went really well?
Often none for most people.
Yeah, right. Right.
I think it's a practice we have to get into.
Yeah.
When we talk to people who have a history, a protective pattern of ruminating, I know one of the suggestions, and like we're sort of, I think, playful with this stuff. Like if you find yourself ruminating for an hour over worst case scenario, okay, are you willing to spend equal amount of time? Let's just do equal amount of time. Equal amount of time thinking up things that could go well, right? Mm-hmm. Or if you have like one thought that's unhelpful, fine, have it, say it out loud, think it, do whatever you want with it. Can you give yourself the opportunity to think of one thought that's helpful? And that in itself helps you build that muscle of I can do both. I don't just have to live in this one part of worrying about stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm. There's so much nonsense in the brain too, right? This was one of my favorite things when I started meditating years ago. It's just noticing your thoughts. And so first noticing that there are so many of them. And even when you're trying to not have them, they're coming up seemingly out of nowhere. You start noticing that they're often not even your own thoughts. And then they become pretty entertaining and they're like outlandishness and the directions they take and the cascading thoughts. And when we're unconsciously letting ourselves ruminate about things that are worrying us, there's going to be a large percentage of that that's just total nonsense. And if we're not bringing attention to it, we'll never notice that. And we take it so seriously. Mm-hmm. Yet when it's thoughts about what might be good, I think we're pretty quick often to stop those because we don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We don't want to get too hopeful and, you know, have our hopes crash. So okay. We just stay in this low level, unpleasant ruminating state for forever.
Really funny because it made me realize something. So I remember like for decades, I didn't want to think about what could possibly be good and what could go well and dream bigger because I was so afraid of feeling disappointed if it didn't happen. Mm. And so I'm worried I'm going to feel disappointed. I don't want to feel disappointed, but I'm willing to feel this, what you're describing, this low level, everyday crappy. I'll take that over the possibility that maybe I would be disappointed if that didn't turn out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a fun life.
You're so funny. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're in good company, everybody. I know you all are feeling us. Mm-hmm. So standard. Mm-hmm.
And like, there's real value in being able to get out the thoughts that swirl around and not take them as truth, not take them as full truth, not take them as anything that needs to be acted upon, not take them as something you need to now shame yourself about. And it reminds me of practice that we facilitated a lot, we participated in a lot, which was empty the bucket. Where we just set a timer and sat across from someone and used the prompt, something I want you to know is, and we just empty it out, like every thought that was in the mind, no matter how ridiculous, how dark, like we just got it out. No matter whether we believed it 1% or 1,000%, we just got it out of the system. And it felt so good to get those out of the system. And often you could tell, like afterwards, you're like, yeah, some of those things really don't matter. Or some of those are really pretty funny. Or some of those really highlight for me what really does matter. Mm-hmm. Right? I had, we'll probably talk about this more in depth in a different episode, but I was given the invitation today to let someone know, well, what was your brain thinking? Where did your brain go last night? Because it went to some pretty wild places that were not super helpful. And so I took the opportunity. I'm like, someone's asking me where it went. I'm going to tell you where it went. I'm going to tell you the 52 places it went, and it went there 3 times. And then I fell back asleep. But I wasn't like, oh my God, are all the 52 things true? What will they think if I tell them all those things? Will it make them feel bad if I tell them all those things? I'm like, they asked. And so I'm reporting. Mm. Right. And this is another thing that we talk about practicing is learning to report our mind. Right. This is just what went through my mind. This is not my true reality. This is not the whole reality. This is not what I believe all the time. This is not how I feel all the time. But these are at 3 a.m. the things that went through my head, if you're asking.
Mm. Yeah.
And yeah.
That's such a powerful distinction, recognizing that our thoughts and our beliefs are not actually the same thing. And this is part of the importance of emptying your bucket or reporting your mind, is to air out the things that are in there. And then you get to recognize which ones you actually believe. So many of our worries, often when we express them, we realize, I'm not actually worried about that. But when we've got it contained in our brain, we feel genuinely worried, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I've also had to practice on the receiving end of listening to someone empty the bucket of, like, I'm not responsible for fixing anything. They're not asking for anything to be fixed. I don't need to now worry that that's a worry that they have, you know? Mm-hmm. And because that's where I probably would have gone in my people pleaser caretaker phase of my life. And I probably would have had a very hard time listening to someone report their mind, because mm-hmm. I would take it personally and I would feel bad for them, you know, all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And, right now it feels really good to sit and just let someone report their mind to me. And I'm like, thank you. Do you need anything? Yes, no, we can work with that. And for me to do the same and report my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember the feeling of needing to make sure this person knows that I'm here for them. My gosh, if that didn't take up all of my energy, I couldn't even really listen because I was so busy making sure they knew I was listening.
You mean, and you know,
I kind of wasn't, because I was too involved with my inner experience. I was having my own experience of their experience. We talk now so easily about reporting our minds and emptying the bucket. But I remember at the beginning, it felt like a really big ask. What do you mean you want me to sit here and just empty my bucket for 2 minutes?
It felt like horrendous, that idea.
Horrendous. I'm like, I don't have anything to say. And like, that's okay. Then the role of the listener is just to maintain eye contact. Just keep saying something I want you to know is, and breathe and hopefully fill in the blank. I remember there was one session we were facilitating when we were at 10th and Maple. I can't remember what that place was called. And there were some women who'd been there for years and some women who were quite new. And what was it? We were setting a 10-minute timer. It was a 10-minute empty the bucket. And I think there was a cross section of people there who, one of them was like, how long do I have? And I remember two different responses. So I don't know which one is right, but it was either, never mind, like, you don't get to know how long, just talk, mm-hmm. you know, you don't mm-hmm. need to plan your bucket. And the other possibility that happened was that I said it's 10 minutes. And the women who'd been there for a long time were like, heaved a sigh of relief. They're like, great, I can fill in this blank for 10 minutes. That's perfect. And then there were gasps of horror from the new women who were like, I can't talk for 10 minutes about my mind. Like, we're just not used to it. Mm-hmm. And I remember being told, just make space for it. And you will fill in the blank. And I remember being incredulous about that. But when we are given space, words do eventually flow. And without exception, people come to love the time of emptying their buckets and just being heard. Yeah.
Yeah. People go from mortified and terrified to like, wow, I'm super excited. I can't wait. It feels so good to spend 10 minutes having someone's undivided presence. And I can just say, whatever. And I think both of those things happen. I think we've done sessions where we don't tell people how much time there is, and we've done sessions where we've told people how much time there is. And like, all of those reactions along the whole spectrum have happened. And getting to see like how worried people are. Well, do I say this thing even though I don't always think it's true, or right. I don't totally believe it, or like I sort of understand why the person did that thing, so like maybe I'm not mad about it. And you know, we encourage people to just practice to say the thing that wants to come out of your mouth if you were unfiltered, right? And part of the empty the bucket practice was to notice, how does filtering happen for you? Do you notice it happening in your body? Do you notice it happening in your mind, right? If you're giving free rein to say whatever, do you actually use that space, or are you curating what you're saying based on what you think the other person wants to hear, or what you're allowed to say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my wishes for everyone is that they don't feel they need to qualify everything or prove their value in every moment. I think it's a really common thing for people to say, well, a part of me worries about or believes or thinks this may be dark and unpleasant thing. And then they'll quickly qualify it by, and of course I realize that, you know, everyone is wonderful and everything is great and I'm a light worker and blah, blah, blah. And I want people to just trust these parts and not feel like they need to make these demonstrations of value and lovingness, and because that's the default, right?
Yeah.
Lovingness and trust, yeah. The default.
I remember one thing I struggled with, which were things like, I'm selfish, I'm jealous, right? I would have such a hard time saying stuff like that because I'm like, but I'm not selfish all the time, or it's like only in this context, or I know that jealousy is like just pointing me towards like what I desire, but like I couldn't be like, I'm a jealous person, or I'm a selfish person. Right. Like I was like, but that's not all of me. But I couldn't even come to acceptance. Well, that is part of you sometimes. So just say the thing because it's true.
Yeah. And that is specifically what I'm owning right now, is my jealousy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fun.
So good.
Yeah.
How did we get here? We were talking about not a damn thing I can do about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Notice, this is the invitation to notice what are things you can do something about. And so either go do them or don't. And notice when you've done all that you can in this situation. Give yourself some credit for that. And then practice learning how to find some ease in the waiting.
The feeling that I'm experiencing now is like giving up is sort of the only words that I have for it, but I mean it in a good way. It's like when you've done everything and you've given everything and you're almost at the finish line and there's nothing left. Mm-hmm. And it's like your bandwidth is one byte wide. There's so much relief and acceptance to be experienced in that moment. I've got nothing left to give. I've done everything. I'm at the end. There's like this peaceful feeling, even when the uncertainty is still present.
That reminds me of how important of a life skill that is, to notice I'm at the end and to be able to like brush off your hands and walk away. I didn't know how to do that before. I just kept putting my hands back into the thing, thinking that if I'm connected to it, like that's how I have control. And if I have control, that's how I'm going to feel best and safest and all the things. But when you said, you know, I think it's this feeling of like, I'm done, right? I'm giving up. I'm like, oh, it is that feeling. I recognize that feeling. When you use those words, yeah, it's not an I'm giving up in this defeated way. It's my part is finished. I can now walk away, exit off the stage. Someone else's part now.
Yeah, totally. No need to run interference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there we go. Thank you. I love your, not your, the story of the jock strap.
It was like horrid. I have never smelt anything that bad before in my life. And I know it's probably going to get worse with like the age of my kids and the activities they're a part of and forgetting to do laundry. But wow.
Potent.
Very potent. And I'm proud of myself for not using that. We used it. I used it as an opportunity for connection versus an opportunity to shame and teach and like drill in instructions, which I think it's really easy to want to go that route.
Yeah.
Right. But there's something humorous about the situation, or maybe there is something humorous that I could see now that maybe an older version of me, a past version of me, wouldn't have been able to see that.
Beautiful. Thank you. Anything else you want to say about what I guess amounts to non-attachment?
No, I think I'm all done.
All done. We give up.
All done.
Complete. Yep. Okay. Okay. Do you have a closing practice that you're feeling?
Closing practice that I'm feeling. I'm feeling some tension in my neck. So I'm just going to let my neck, my head hang. And this will be a good practice. Whether you want to work with your neck or some other part of your body where you feel a stretch, we often feel a stretch, but then we like keep moving our bodies. So this is an invitation to like feel a stretch, notice that there's a stretch or a pull, and like see if you can just be there for a full breath. Let yourself feel that. And then again, the option of staying for two more breaths or time to change into a different position. And feel that for a breath. And the option to stay or the option to change. And feel that for a breath. Or three. And that's it.
Thanks, Gigi.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Okie doke. So that's us for this week. We will see you next week. Please do like, follow, and subscribe. And if anything we've said here today has been helpful for you, please share with somebody that you care about. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.